to agree on this ahead of time. Brendan, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you, Alan.
Welcome to another week of Not a Thing Podcast.
Still podcasting, still the week.
Yep. Still doing well. We're still holding strong. I think we're the number on the podcast this week is going to be 10, if I'm remembering correctly.
I believe that's correct.
Yes, so we're in double digits. Technically, we were in double digits last week, but that's because we count from zero, because we're good nerds.
It's our podcast network address. Yeah. Got to start with that zero.
Yeah, it's been a good week. It's been a lot of stuff, but I think it's funny because I think most of our topics this week we've kind of pulled together in the last couple of days or so, which is good. Yeah. I think it's interesting. There's so much
fresh.
Stuff. Yes, so much stuff. We had to whittle it down to only the couple things that you guys wanted to hear, guys and gals. Don't want to exclude anybody. Thank you, everyone who's listening. Hope everyone's still up and enjoying everything that we're doing, and if you're not, or if you are, we'd love any feedback. Throw it onto our Facebook page, find our Twitter account.
At Not A Thing Cast.
Yes, the Not A Thing Podcast Facebook page, the Not A Thing Podcast.com website, all that good stuff. We love it. We're glad to have you listening, and hope you continue. For topics this week, one of the things we just watched.
Mere moments ago
was the debate, but not that debate,
not the boring one.
Yes, the rough thing for me for the presidential debate, the first one, the more economics, kind of domestic policy economics related one, was just how really poor of a job Jim Lehrer did as moderator. I think Jim Lehrer moderating the debates has to not be a thing.
If they're going to use a PBS person, they should use the Count, because he keeps his pimp hands strong.
Plus, he has that awesome laugh. You know, it's easy to
turn 1-2 minutes over your time.
Very, very effectual. That would be quite good. But I don't think it was a very kind of interesting debate for me. And I think part of the sentiment from that comes from a tweet I saw, and I wish I could remember who tweeted it. I don't remember it, but the sentiment was, these debates are pointed at undecided voters, but they're critiqued by voters who've already decided about what they're going to do.
That's a good point.
And that's how it is for me. I mean, I did not come away with it with a different opinion about how I was going to vote. It's more I'm just angry about how everything came across, and it just came across as really just bad. But what the debate we did watch, which I found much more entertaining and much more interesting, was the Rumble in an air conditioned auditorium, name. And it's Jon Stewart and Bill O'Reilly. Just kind of going at it. It was very loosely moderated by Edie Hill from CNN. It was definitely jokey, and there were a lot of laugh lines, mostly coming from Jon Stewart
But there was a lot of real points in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That made sense.
Yeah.
Which was something that I didn't really get a lot of from the other real debate.
Right. Right. I think, the format was less important, and the way that they were kind of free to kind of go at each other, I think, was more interesting. I mean, the debates are almost politeness exercises. And then you have to balance how polite you are with how tenacious you are. And I think, for the last debate, I mean, if you look at it from that kind of measure, Romney probably won because he was able to like kind of dominate the airtime.
Although I read Obama actually had more airtime.
Interesting.
Than Romney.
Hmm.
When they actually timed it.
Wow.
It just felt like.
Sure.
Romney did.
Hmm. Well, it felt it. Yeah. That's a really interesting stat.
Although I think there's some sort of time space distortion going on in that auditorium. Because when I was watching that, it time stood still.
Yeah.
I've watched a lot of debates, mm-hmm. and I watch them every election, mm-hmm. and man, I was bored.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But not with the Jon Stewart.
No.
Bill O'Reilly one.
No, I mean.
I was thoroughly entertained.
Yeah, and it's not work. It's not entertained like, you know, oh, that was really funny. I mean, there is that, but it's really cool to see people with actual points of view talking. I mean, there was some, you know, talking over each other kinds of issues, but I think they both had chances to, you know, say real arguments, and you can take from it. I mean, what it leaves with me is I got to look up some stuff, because I get a lot of the stuff that they're talking about. And then there are like fine points that I don't get. And so it inspires me to look up more and be more active about it in learning about it. And I think that's the hallmark of, you know, a good debate.
Yeah, I need to look up whoever the pacemakers is. I don't know. That was a reference.
That was
a reference last time. I knew who Lil Wayne was.
Yeah. But I think you know, what I said was, I think a good debate inspires you to learn more. A great debate inspires you to debate more people, to go, you know, and bring, you know, go take what you've learned and like actually talk to people about it. Because I know I don't really talk to people. I mean, I definitely don't talk to people at that level, but I know I'm not knowledgeable enough at that level. There are plenty of people that want to debate me about it. Apparently it's come up a couple times. It's kind of strange. It's like, I consider myself kind of an authority on a lot of things, and I kind of speak authoritatively about things like in my work. And I think people expect that I hold really strong opinions about political ideas too. And I do, but not at work.
There is a line there.
I think that line is might be a little blurry at my work. That might just be how it is. But
should there be a line? I mean, shouldn't people be able to have reasonable discourse about their differing opinions?
Yeah, yeah. I think there should be. I think some people don't handle it well, and so it's easy to come off as I think politics is probably more internally grounded than, say, whether I use, you know, this hypervisor or that hypervisor. So I think it's because those convictions are much stronger, it colors decisions that, you know, you hear about people when they're talking about something not political and stuff right. like that. And that's my only issue. I just don't want, or it, how you talk about something when you feel personally vested about it. You know, if you start seeing those cues when people are talking about things that are less quote unquote important, but more kind of work related, then you start to, you know, it starts to get messy. And so I try to avoid things that are too, what is it? Personally near and dear when we're talking about stuff at work. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's just how I kind of draw my professionalism line is how that goes. And I agree though. I should be able to talk to almost anybody about, you know, how politics should go. And I don't mind it when we're not on the clock or whatever, you know, at lunch.
So it's one of those things that it should be that way.
Yeah.
But the way things are now, maybe that's not the best course.
Well, I think a lot of it, and this was brought up in the debate, it was that there's the things that are focused on topic wise are, it's kind of wrong to focus so sharply on some of the things that are focused on. For one of the things that, O'Reilly brought up a couple times was, should we pay for women's birth control, you know, under, you know, universal healthcare, or, you know, and it's there, the the argument is that, you know, no, we shouldn't, because it's a personal choice to use birth control. And the opposite argument is it's a woman's issue that's only for women. So it's hard to decouple that from, you know, if it's a choice to use birth control or if it's just you have to, because there's no equivalent, you know, universally, that kind of thing. And it's messy in that respect, but I think a lot of it is, you know, that using that as the standard bearer for kind of the system as a whole sets up a false like yes or no kind of argument about it.
Well, that was one of the things that John Stewart said, was that the right tends to use simple solutions to complex problems. That's the approach.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says from his view on Bullshit Mountain.
the first example of that, I think, was that I saw was the Chaos on Bullshit Mountain video, where he talks about that it was the spin that had to be enacted when the leak about Romney's the 47% video came out. And it was just funny how that was ranged. You know, in typical John Stewart fashion, they show all the clips that are just, you know, completely like, this was bad, but no, he meant to do that. And it's just, you know, it's all ridiculous spin, you know, over time. And I'm sure a lot of those things were probably taken out of context, but even in context, it's hard to imagine how something like that plays without sounding completely like, what?
I think I'd like to hear a parody of Big Rock Candy Mountains with Bullshit Mountain.
The meter doesn't work. I'm sure we could pull something together.
Bullshit Mountain?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. If anyone's listening to the to the podcast and would like to...
Do you do song parody? Do you, Weird Al Yankovic, listen to our podcast?
Oh, that would be awesome. Awesome. I do like Weird Al Yankovic without the glasses and the mustache. It was kind of shocking for me initially, but it's grown on me, and I'm good with it.
Should be a thing.
Yeah, should be a thing. But coming back to the debate, I mean, one of the things that I'd heard in a TED Talk, actually, was how it's really misleading to set up these kind of either-or scenarios. It's like either we have money, you know, we give money to welfare programs, or, you know, the country, you know, goes down the drain, you know. And it's like, those aren't opposite the way those go. Those should really be drawn as two different axes, maybe. And
yeah,
then
there
you
seems
can...
to be a loss of sense of scale and context in a lot of these arguments on both sides at times.
Yeah. So I think the main thing that I take out of this is it was really important to pay attention in the critical thinking classes that I took when I was, or class, rather, that I took the one quarter of college English class for critical thinking, because it applies when you're trying to listen to this, because it's easy to get swept up in an emotional appeal, especially. I mean, that seems to be the biggest thing. It's like, you know, when someone has a case that's very sweeping and very easy to grasp, you have to wonder, is it really that easy when you're applying it to a company or a country of 250 plus million people and however big the government says it is and all that kind of stuff? It's like you have to wonder if the spirit of the conviction is what you're really going for, and the implementation is also, you know, it should be under scrutiny too. That's the way I think of it. Yeah. So I like the debate. I think anyone that wants more, that's yearning for more discourse where it seems actually balanced. I mean,
they poked fun at each other, but at the same time, they, you know, listened to, actually gave the other time to speak.
Yeah.
Which you don't often see. And when you see two personalities like that interact, usually it's a 5-minute segment,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes they'll throw you to the internet for an extra 5 minutes or whatever. Yeah. But it was nice to get that. It was like an hour and a half.
Yep.
To see them cover a wide range of issues,
mm-hmm.
and be able to, you know, not be cut off.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I really liked it. I think it was definitely worth the $4.95 that it was on the website. And it's actually set up, if I'm remembering correctly, as a pay what you like kind of thing. And so you can, I'm pretty sure you can even just watch it for free. And if you, you know, if you did like it, you can pay them. They are giving some amount, I think it's half of their proceeds, to a bunch of different charities that they list, that were picked by both Jon Stewart and Bill O'Reilly. So I think that's kind of nice that it was set up that way. But it's, I mean, it's easily the best discussion of kind of political topics that I've seen, like, in a while, that didn't feel like it was people talking down to me or
mm-hmm.
or otherwise, otherwise really advocating, you know, one side or the other overly heavily. Like, I will, it's too easy to find completely one-sided arguments mm-hmm. For either side. So it's nice to see them both.
I was trying to be convinced one way or the other.
Yeah.
I'm just like, these are some things that we've observed.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was nice.
They should do a podcast together. That would be sweet.
We should get them on the podcast.
I would love it. Yes. Yes, I'll have my people talk to their people or something like that. Keen.
So I'll go talk to Jon Stewart's people at Comedy Central, and you can go to the Gates of Mordor to go talk to John Bill O'Reilly.
I
messenger at the Black Gate.
Ooh. Oh, it's all about the voice of Sauron.
The eye of Sauron.
No, the voice of Sauron. You remember the voice of Sauron at the gate?
Oh, yeah.
He talks, and in the movie, it was done really well, like over exaggerated mouth kind of action. And if I'm remembering right, he's received by having his head chopped off. Yeah, he's kind of shooting the messenger.
Yeah, like
there.
I said, I'll go to Comedy Central. You can go to Mordor.
I'll get right on that. Get right on that. Okay.
Speaking of debts of things.
Yes. One article I saw this week that was linked from the fiance of a good friend of ours, Chris Weingarten, who is a writer for Spin magazine. He's written a couple things musically, and he's good for tweets. It's like 1,000 times yes is his handle. And one of the things that he linked was about it was an article from Hipster Runoff, which I guess I had never heard of.
No, I haven't heard of it.
But it apparently was chosen by Time as one of the better blogs, or maybe even the blog for last year or something like that. Huh. And I read it a little bit more, and it's mostly Indian alt culture musically. Mostly music focused and kind of style, et cetera, but I thought it was a good kind of barometer of what is cool without as much kind of mainstream push behind it, which is interesting because the article is called the Death of Indie Music, and it's the author of the blog mostly saying that, you know, he thinks that indie as he knew it, it doesn't exist anymore, in short, and that, you know, even the stuff that he would consider indie is now essentially been mainstreamed enough that you can, you know, make yourself appear to be indie very easily, and a lot of it, a lot of the stuff that he attributes to that is that, you know, there are blogs, you know, and he counts his in one of them as one of them, are being manipulated as kind of content farms, is what he calls it, as just like, you know, let me do what I can to get the search engine optimization of whatever this band is higher.
Feed the echo chamber.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's kind of unfortunate that the system has already been gamed as much as that, that you can do that. The thing that I found more interesting from it is there's an air of, you know, kind of bitterness and disappointment about how, you know, the music that he seems to genuinely like has been, you know, co-opted and, you know, turned not cool anymore, and, you know, is just mainstream again. And if you take that in a vacuum, I think it's so funny, because that's what happened to alternative music, and that's what happened to electronic music, and that's what happens, I think, to a lot of genres of music once they grow outside of their niche.
Well, that's what's happened to nerd culture.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely has.
The Big Bang Theory, which is a pretty mainstream show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's CBS. That's as mainstream as you get.
Pretty much.
And there's this, you know, it's the nerd point of view, mm-hmm. but it's really not.
Yeah.
You're taking regular, old, tried and true network television jokes.
Yes.
And putting them in, you know, nerd skins.
The Emperor has no clothes! I think there are good points in the article, and we'll link it in the show notes, but I think the best point that comes out of it is how tied to the internet indie music was, because it started as a niche kind of thing, you know, and you know, that's been a recurring theme on our shows, that niche things are becoming more popular, not necessarily, you know, that niche things are becoming more mainstream, but people finding the niche that they like.
Communities are growing.
Yes, but also that there are more opportunities to find a community that fits, you know, what you're looking for at the time, and things like that. And those kinds of things will continue to exist. It's just that this one is maybe outgrowing, you know, its nicheness, and, you know, so I think that's interesting for him to recognize that, and that's kind of a lot of, it takes a lot of kind of humble self-awareness to see that. So I don't think that's, we were talking about this earlier. So is the thing that I like in that, that it's not a thing, or is the thing that I like about it that it's recognizing that it's not a thing? It might be a little too meta at this point, and so I'll just point at the article and say, read it, because it's pretty good. Yeah, it's a pretty good article. The only thing I don't like about the article...
Is it the way he writes dates?
Yes!
Because that bugged the shit out of me.
Yes!
You don't abbreviate 2012 2K12. That doesn't make any fucking sense.
It does not save any characters.
No!
Right. It saves a character when you're saying 2008. You save one letter if you say 2K8 instead of 2008.
No, he did 2K08.
Oh, I did not see that. That's awful.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awful. Okay, anyway. Yeah, yeah. So he does a couple...
Maybe he wrote the blog on his phone.
Maybe. Because he does do, like, any one, N, mm-hmm. the letter N, the letter E, and then the number one. And, oh, I hate that. I can't stand that.
Detract from its... authority to you at all? Do you take it less seriously?
I do actually a little bit, but I trust that maybe he's done this forever and it's just his convention, it's just the way it is. And it's
okay. Sure. I didn't read any of his other articles. Right. Maybe, I don't know, I thought maybe he's doing it as a joke. But I kinda don't think.
No, I don't think so. I
hoped it was a joke.
Yeah.
I don't think it was.
Yeah. That was a little annoying to see the kind of text speak in. Like, I mean, he doesn't claim to be a journalist, or he doesn't claim to be doing that. He has valid points. They are mostly well thought out. But, you know, I think it's an interesting article to read from a kind of wide view perspective of, oh, look at this guy. He's kind of complaining about how his music is going away. And
Well, and it was a lot longer article than I was expecting from that subject.
Sure.
And maybe that's just something I've found in reading different blogs, is they're short.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. There's not a lot of content there.
It's true. And it's...
You have maybe two sentences of fact in a blog,
yeah,
or opinion,
yeah,
and the rest is all just filler.
Right. Because then you can create, you know, if I can write 10 sentences, I can write 5 blogs out of that instead of just one actually long, well-thought-out one. So this was a good one to read. It's
not just the death of Indy, the death, yeah, of the English language.
That should not be a thing.
No.
I'm
save English.
Yes, I'm in favor of writing words out. I actually don't abbreviate anything when I'm texting, and I try and use proper commas and punctuation and capitalization.
I would, except my grammar is terrible.
Oh, okay.
Commas are not my friend.
Most people use too many commas, so maybe
I don't think I use enough.
Maybe we can work.
That's my problem.
Yeah, I think it balances out in that respect. It's pretty good. So, death of indie music article thing, actual death of indie music maybe not so much a thing.
Yeah, that's just something getting old.
Yeah, yeah. There is other music out there. There is music that's actually indie out there. You can find
SoundCloud.
It. SoundCloud. Woohoo! Okay. The other article that you found, I thought was really cool. And this is definitely not a death-related thing. This is a life-related thing. This is a very, very cool article about a Nobel Prize in stem cell research.
Nobel Prize in medicine and biology?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the short form is that biological sciences superstar. I don't
scientist
know
guy.
Yeah, big time.
Big science guy from
big
Japan.
Science dude essentially figured out how to take adult cells and revert them into kind of a stem cell-like state where they would grow or do things as if they were undifferentiated cells. So taking a big, big leap back from a what the heck are we talking about here kind of thing is when is stem cells are called stem cells because when you're a baby and your cells have not fully decided what they are yet, they
before
start
you're a baby.
Before you're a baby, yeah, they start in what's called a stem cell state, which is they're undifferentiated, so it's not necessarily
the
a bone
from which all other cells
right.
stem.
Yes, they branch out from there. So some of them turn into blood cells, brain cells, skin cells, bone cells. They're undifferentiated in that they have the potential to become other things.
Like Legos.
So yes, they're Legos without being put together in a thing.
Single
so,
block layer.
So they're called pluripotent cells, which I thought is a great word because pluri means many and potent is potential, so they can become many things. So you can take the DNA and, you know, the stuff that is in a cell that's already been differentiated, that's turned into something like a skin cell, and reverse engineer it and tell it to become, you know, a different cell or the base of a different cell, which would mean you could do things like regrow cells that were damaged, like, or, you know, you can regrow whole organs. There's a lot of kind of stem cell therapies that could be used to fix a lot of things, which is interesting because when I first heard about stem cells, it was always done from the fact that the only way to get stem cells was to get them from when the body is still a stem. So essentially,
yeah,
yeah. They were called embryonic stem cells, as in from an embryo.
Which caused a bit of a kerfuffle in the political world, because people have some strong feelings about that.
About
but
cells.
But because of this discovery, that's all circumvented.
Yeah, if assuming it turns out
yes.
the way everything is, because it's still in a research beta phase, if you will, they're trying stuff out on animals. Which
oh, we should, you know, name check the doctor. Was,
yeah, do it.
Shinya Yamanaka.
Okay, I'm glad you said it and not me. So we'll.
So if I said that wrong.
We'll link it in the article, and you can pronounce it however you like.
Yes,
I'm impressed by it. I think it's it's really cool. It has a lot of cool implications. I think it also has a lot of interesting debate to go on it, and some weird moral implications about what it could be used for. Because, I mean, you can take it to a very, very heavy extreme and say, oh, well, if I can make something that grows into, you know, part of your body, why can't I grow, like, you know, a new body that is younger and, you know, be more vital that way? I mean, maybe not all at once, but it's like I can replace organs as they start to go and just
would you replace an organ with a stem cell grown
I think surgery is still not a 100% it's gonna be fine kind of process, even for what I would consider simple procedures. So I would say no, not an elective surgery.
But what about a life-saving surgery?
Yeah.
Would you rather have the stem cell grown organ, like say you needed a new heart?
Sure.
Or would you rather go the cadaver route?
I think
test tube or womb. Where do you fall?
So I think I fall test tube. I think it has less potential. I think the main thing is that because it's grown from essentially your cells, it has a lot less issue of being something that your body will reject, or being something that, you know, you might not be able to find because the donor pool is not as wide as you'd like it, and things like that. Where it gets interesting is how that comes down from a, like, when is it okay to replace something? Like, how...
It's like your 100,000-mile war.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh. Well, you know...
50 really is the new 40.
Yeah. Replace the... you gotta do the old, 20K service on the lungs there, or whatever, you know. I mean, I think it's an, you know, if it's an elective thing, you have to say, okay, that's kind of crazy.
What about adding things?
Yeah.
Like if I could have an extra liver so I could drink twice as much.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to, like, you know, interesting body modification kinds of tracks too, because it comes from your body, so it won't be rejected. So if you can modify it to do whatever you want, I could grow longer arms than, you know, I would normally have.
Oh, depending on what. I just thought of a great prank. You could put someone's appendix back. Who'd have it removed?
Oh. Is that a prank? You wake up in the tub of ice and the kidney has been put back in you? The urban legend farm never stops.
Is that going to hurt the ice industry? Bathtub kidney removals and you grow a new one?
Oh, yikes. Yikes. I think there's a lot of stuff in there. I think medical research needs to look at that, and I think smarter people than I need to think about what the implications are and talk about it on the internet for a low rate that I could, you know, watch. I would love to see more stuff about that. I like the topics that we found in this range that are kind of interesting stuff that I would not have come across just kind of as a matter of course. I mean, most of the blogs that I read do tend to be kind of tech focused, but I don't get enough kind of interesting research stuff, and I think that's really cool. So I've been enjoying those topics recently. So thanks
for finding this. Nice one. To branch out.
Yeah.
Branch out, not to be confused with LinkedIn.
Ooh. Which we learned about today. I hope everyone enjoyed last week's guest show. We're hoping to do more of those in the future, very, very near future, in fact.
Yeah, we think we've got a couple lined up. We won't announce them yet. We'll save that.
Yeah.
Build some suspense.
Yes. If you'd like to be on the podcast, if you have a
you have an interesting hobby or occupation.
Yeah, a thing you'd like to talk about. We'd love to talk about it with you. So let us know. We're not too picky.
Yet.
It just goes to show there are a lot of interesting and thought-provoking things in the world and people in the world, and it's good to highlight them here and there. So we do what we can. And on that note, we're going to move over. Oops. Ah. There we go. We're going to move over to a different, slightly different topic. The one of the things that has been kind of on my mind this week was I'd read about it was in an article about sleep kind of optimizing, and you essentially get a band with an accelerometer in it, and then you'd wear it overnight, and it would kind of read data about how you move, you know, when you're sleeping, and make assumptions that, you know, if you move, you're probably more restless, and then use it to kind of gather data that you could use to have more restful sleep and things like that. But the article kind of blossomed out to a whole thing about personal metrics and keeping track of things that you and your body like do, and using technology to do it, because it's hard to kind of self-monitor a lot of things. I mean, one of the things is just, you know, keep a pedometer and it counts your steps, and you can use that as a baseline for your exercise rate or something like that. But you know, feeding all of these things kind of together to gain this kind of big data picture of yourself, I think is interesting. I'm not as keen about the recommendations aspect of it that comes out, but I think some things, you know, they make sense about how they work, and at least you can compare days to other days, and that kind of stuff I'm fine with. I think aggregating the data and then making an assumption about how healthy you are, or how, you know, restful or restless you're sleeping, or how healthy you are for eating or something like that is can be too complex to pull up. It's too easy to do that. I mean, there's certain things that work, like the Nike Fuel Band. Mm-hmm. I think is an interesting concept. You wear it and it has kind of a, instead of counting steps or doing range of motion, I mean, it does that.
Does that count every time you just do it?
It's something like that. I wonder if someone has worn one during sexual activity to see how much Nike Fuel you get.
The Just Do It Band.
Yes. That would be really interesting. I'm sure someone has done some kind of like study of how much what's the caloric output of just doing it is. But anyway, maybe for another show we can. If anyone wants to send me a Nike Fuel Band in order to do the study, I don't personally have one, so I do have a GPS and a heart rate monitor that I've worn for, like, you know, working out and cycling and stuff, and I think it's fun to see that data, but I don't know if I can do any meaningful correlation of that data, because I've found two different. I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll just, part of what says to me I can't let other software make recommendations for me in that is that there were at least three different ways of calculating my like optimal heart rate, you know, just in the one software package that I got. It's like, well, if you use this scale or this scale or this scale, it can be this. I'm like, wait, so which one do I pick? Because they're different. It doesn't, mm-hmm. How can there be three different scales for how this works?
well, sometimes you don't even need to have necessarily a recommendation from the data.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things that Tim Ferriss talked about in his book, 4-Hour Body.
Yep.
Was just the fact that you are monitoring and keeping that track of those statistics will affect
your
ability to do whatever you're trying to measure.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, you're right. There is something to be...
metrics themselves are a tool.
Yes. Just being self-aware of that, you know, I mean, there's some amount of it. There's kind of like a internal automatic balance because it's, oh, because I know it's being tracked, even though I'm the one tracking it, I have some responsibility to put up good numbers or something like that.
Well, it's not really even conscious necessarily.
Yeah, that's true.
Your body just, you know.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because there is an element of your stress level, especially with weight loss. The the thing that the chemical that deals with managing stress is also responsible, or at least it's been linked to how your body stores fat and controls your weight, because it's the kind of thing where if you're under a lot of stress, then your body is more likely to hold on to the energy that it gets, so it's more likely to store things as fat. I mean, it's kind of, this is the kind of thing where it's very broad stroke, so it's very hard to say, like, all the time, right, if you're very stressed, you're probably, you know, fat or something, which doesn't, I mean, it's not exactly.
Wait a minute. It's not the cheeseburgers, yes. It's the stress.
Yes. But I eat the cheeseburgers to help me get off this, to help me feel unstressed. Oh, I see how it is.
That's where bacon comes in.
Yes. Oh, don't malign lovely bacon.
No, I'm saying it's a good thing.
Okay, good. Bacon
lowers stress levels.
Bacon
may raise your blood pressure, but your stress levels go down.
Yeah.
That so, bacon bliss.
Yes. And one really interesting thing I read was that a way that you can very easily control your weight, and this was borne out in a couple tests, is just take a picture of what you're going to eat before you eat it. And even if all you do is take that picture, it's exactly what you were saying. I mean, you're not consciously saying, like, well, I'm going to eat less of it, or I'm going to eat something different. It's just because you're taking a picture of it, it, you know, cements in your mind, like, okay, well, this is my meal, and this is what, you know, this is the value that I'm attaching to it. And so before you're, you know, you purchase that meal, before you build it or anything, there's that kind of kernel in the back of your head saying, like, yeah, right. And what's it going to look like translates into how's it going to taste and how good is it for you and all that kind of stuff. So I think all of it does kind of mix up. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, the system is a lot bigger than any individual metric. And so pulling together like a plan to change, you know, what those metrics are is a lot more involved than any, you know, like, of those recommendations. So I'm in favor of taking personal metrics.
Yes, I am as well.
I think you can gain a lot of insight into it, but insight on your own. Go ahead and compare the numbers yourself. You know, take an active part in, you know.
Well, that's one of the other major points that Ferris makes.
Yeah.
Is that it's all you.
Exactly.
Don't trust other people to figure stuff out for you.
Yes.
Like, you need to do it yourself.
It's great. I have to read that book. Every review, well, not every review, but a lot of the reviews I've heard kind of very positive.
I really liked it. I found it to be effective, what I actually followed, what I was supposed to be doing.
Well, there's a lot of parts to it, and I'm sure, you know, it's the kind of thing where you have to, you know, you probably can't do all of it at once because it's too overwhelming, but, you know, incremental change, that's my thing. Lots of little incremental changes. Cool. Speaking of incremental changes, we are coming up on the spoiler alert portion of the show. I did not see any movies this week.
Nothing to spoil.
Last week I spoiled two movies. So I can say I'm pretty good about that.
Three if you count The Untouchables.
I have nothing to spoil this week, but
you have some of the spoil.
Yes. I actually didn't have anything to spoil until right down to the wire. This morning, my 13-year-old sister said she wanted me to go to the movies. And that kind of means being a star in the 26-year-old. I went into knowing nothing about other than Anna Kendrick stars. In the collegiate world of a cappella. So when I heard it was a singing movie, I thought, oh crap, is this going to be some sort of Glee bullshit?
Yeah.
What am I doing? I'm doing my big brother duty.
Yeah.
I'll suffer through it.
You are a trooper, sir. Like being a trooper brother is a thing, let me tell you. I'm an eldest brother, and I've been there. I've been there. Not to this degree, though, because my brother and sister are only 2 years younger each way. So my sister's 2 years and then another 2 years for my brother, so we're not too far apart, so the range is not crazy. But
yeah, this worked out a lot better than when I had to go see Avatar the Last Airbender. I'm not sure I'll ever, even she thought it was a piece of crap. We watched, it was like, why did we see that? Like, you wanted to see it.
But Pitch Perfect was...
But no, Pitch Perfect was, I would say, maybe the funniest movie I've seen this year.
Wow.
I laughed a lot.
Wow, that's impressive.
I mean, it was formulaic. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cookie cutter as far as story goes. Like, mm-hmm. If you've seen Bring It On, you've seen this movie. But it was written by a former 30 Rock writer,
okay,
who now is like a co-EP on New Girl.
Okay.
And it's got a pretty solid cast of attractive young women who are all very talented, yeah, and funny.
And because it's college, they're over 18. Hey!
it's funny college movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, do not be scared away from this movie just because it's about singing and it has almost an entirely, well, not entirely female cast, but a majority female cast.
Mm.
So one of the guys that turns up in it is on a show called Workaholics,
mm-hmm,
and he was hilarious. There, I think one of the women, Rebel, I can't remember what her last name is, the actress.
Okay.
She was in She was one of the roommates in Bridesmaids.
Oh, okay.
She was very funny.
Hmm.
She's Australian.
Oh, interesting. So it's college age. So okay, yeah. That makes a little more sense. I'm like, are they doing the 25-year-olds playing high school people thing? But they're high school. They're like college.
Late,
so
late 20s playing freshmen in college.
That's a little more forgivable. Yeah. Than,
One of the One of the main characters was on True Blood.
Oh.
It was the Reverend Newland's wife.
Oh.
She's like the leader of of the acapella group.
Okay. How funny.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't recognize anyone when I saw that poster. It was...
Neither did I.
It was, I guess, at a distance.
There's people from other things that were good.
Hmm.
Like one of the women in it was in Project X.
Okay.
Which was kind of funny. Had some funny bits, but it wasn't not as good as this. Another movie that came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
But no, overall, the music was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded a lot better than the stuff I've seen in passing on Glee.
Is it covers of songs or is it original songs?
No, yeah, it's covers of songs.
Okay,
I mean they're singing.
Okay,
there's almost kind of a Christopher Guest feel to some the performance bits of it.
Okay.
Because there's two announcers, and one of the guys was from Best in Show.
Okay.
And then Elizabeth Banks is the other announcer.
Oh.
But no, it's pretty funny.
Okay.
I would definitely give it my recommendation.
Cool. Yeah, it
don't be afeard.
Yeah, the major complaint for me for Glee, besides the just
melodrama.
Horrible writing, is the you know, I was drawn in by the musical numbers, but even the musical numbers have turned me off now because they don't feel interesting and it feels so overproduced.
Well, that's the thing is, from what I've seen of that show, they have music that accompanies them.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's all
acapella. It's just a cappella.
Yeah, it's just a cappella.
That's which more is, interesting.
There's some pretty good performances of that.
So there was an a cappella group in Glee, but the a cappella was so not real that it was annoying. It's like, people don't make these noises. It doesn't happen. You don't do that. Okay, anyway, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer about
my only complaint like that. Yeah. Is that I did sing some a cappella in high school.
Uh-huh.
And it was totally different than what apparently a cappella is now. We were not singing modern music.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think my favorite, because I was in choir too growing up, and one of my favorite things to sing was I think it's Latin. It's it's usually used for whenever you see any kind of collegial, like, you know, here, you know, we're in college now, and so the background theme is a song called Gaudiamus Igitur and Latin, blah blah blah, but it's, you know, so, but that actually has Latin words, and there's a whole thing, and there's a harmony built into it, so I sang it with three other guys, and it sounded awesome. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that was maybe my crowning achievement for vocal choir ensemble, but yeah, not modern music either, let me tell you.
Not much to spoil in the movie. I mean, it's got some gross-out humor in it.
Okay.
Which is always fun to see. But yeah, plot-wise, nothing new.
Okay.
But a lot of laughs.
A lot of laughs, good performances.
I'm not going to go see it again in the theater, because that would be weird for me to do. Not that other people shouldn't do that, because, you know, they have lady parts.
To each their own.
But yeah. but I would watch it again on DVD. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it was funny.
Yeah, cool.
I was trying to think of other comedies that I've seen in the theater this year, and none really. I mean, maybe 21 Jump Street.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
But aside from that, I couldn't really remember anything that I saw. That, I mean, clearly it's not memorable enough for me to.
It's a high bar for me to want to see a comedy in a theater.
That's true.
Because it's. I think for theater going experiences, you want that kind of epic sound and picture and all that. And I feel like comedies don't usually measure up to that level of thing. What you get from a comedy is the communal atmosphere and everyone laughing and everyone being
and
there.
It was pretty much an empty theater when we were there. It was like me and my sister and a couple other girls.
But that's interesting that it was still good even without
Yeah,
okay. All right, cool. Well, take it under advisement. I have a couple... a few days to myself in the next week, so we'll see if that makes it across the pond as I'm out there.
That's right, our next broadcast, or podcast,
yes.
Because we don't broadcast
yes,
this,
exactly.
is going to be international.
Yeah, so I will be in Barcelona, Spain for work, nominally, but while I'm there, we're going to, you know, rack stuff down, you know, do whatever we need to make the internet work, and then we're gonna try and record a podcast. So we'll do at least two international podcasts in the next, you know, 2 weeks. We'll figure out exactly how we're doing them, but you know, stay tuned. Hopefully it all sounds okay.
Yes. And if it doesn't, we'll blame the Europeans.
Yes. Excellent. Cool. Well, Brandon, good stuff this week.
Thanks,
and
until next time.
Yep.